Okay, so who this week did what I call the Halloween throw up, where you go and you throw up everything that you learned last week on somebody, telling them how not to participate in Halloween, or how not to, or what it's about, or all the things that you learned. Did anybody do that? You did. Marilynda, how'd that go for you? It doesn't go real well, huh? And I've learned that from experience. That's why I'm saying this. Like, when I first learned about what was going on with Halloween, I wanted everybody to know, right? You need to not do this. And I would tell them, they'd either look at me like I was insane, or there was just like a general like unbelief, really, of what I was trying to tell them. So either I was crazy, or really what you're saying is not true and you're misinformed. So over the years, basically what's ended up happening is that just living my life in front of people and not participating, they tend to ask you, why aren't you participating in Halloween? And then it opens up a door for you to talk to them a little bit more. And, you know, you don't have to give all the gory details, and we're going to go in tonight about what God says about worshiping false gods. And, you know, that's exactly what Halloween is it's a day of worship, not of God, but of wickedness, of Satan. And so we as Christians are called to draw those hard lines and not walk into something like that. So as we live our life, people around us will notice and ask, and then that will open the door to talk to them, right? But I know, like, our heart is to not have them participate in that, and so we really want to share everything we know, but that doesn't always work out. And then also, too, it could make them curious, and they could go looking into stuff they shouldn't be looking at, and that really glorifies the enemy and not God. So thanks, Marilynda, for sharing that. I've just done it I don't know how many times, and I just thought I would ask to see who else has done that also. Okay, just an interesting statistic is, if you guys attended Foundations of Faith, Karen talked about, I believe in the occult section, that horror films fall there, and that those horror films are a way, it's a door that opens up to the enemy. And in October, 2 times the amount of horror films are released because of Halloween being celebrated. And so I just thought that was an interesting statistic I wanted to share with you to kind of remind you that it points towards something that is not good. Okay, so we're going to review quickly. Remember, the only thing really I wanted pictured in your head was what? Right, Halloween is bad, right? And why is it bad? Just according to what I've written on the board here. You guys see it? An abomination. That's a very good question. And while we're talking about this, I'll look it up in the Strong's. So the practices are abominable to God, according to Deuteronomy. What's the next thing that it says? Can you see there, Marilynda? What does it say? Right. It's a day to worship Satan, set aside, not by God, but by humans. Okay, and what's that last one? Many Christians are deceived. Yeah, many Christians are deceived and are coaxed into participating because it looks like fun. And the thing that Sandy mentioned last week, which I thought was interesting, was that when our kids participate in trick-or-treating, they're actually participating in a demonic activity, and it's something that they're doing unknowingly. And again, back to what Karen was saying, that opens doors in their lives that they don't even know they're opening. So here they go, practicing demonic activity, summoning spirits, and they don't know. And the devil loves that because he's tricky. And then it opens doors in their lives, and they're walking around not knowing why they're dealing with the things that they're dealing with, because they unwittingly open up doors, correct? So that's not something I want to do to my kids. And I'm sure no one else does either. Okay, James, an abominable thing is disgusting. That is an abhorrence, especially idolatry or an idol. That's what it means in the Strong's. All right, so we're going to review the origins of Halloween so we can have a brief history solid in our minds. Halloween originated from what people? Do you guys remember? Right, Celts. Celts. Yes. Okay, and what was that festival they celebrated? Yeah, Samhain, kind of a weird word, right? All the practices of Samhain were a form of worship of whom? Satan. Because he can dress himself up in all kinds of ways, but it's still the same thing. All right, early missionaries came to convert the Celts, and the Pope during that time in the 6th century decided to do what in reaction to their pagan holidays? He decided to consecrate the thing they were worshiping to Christ. And we decided that that was a form of compromise, right? Because had he had eradicated it, or had the missionaries eradicated it, they would have had no more problems with this particular festival, and it wouldn't have carried on like it has. In the 8th century, what holiday was moved to November 1st to combat Samhain practices? You just said it. All Saints Day, yeah. And so they called it something else also, All Hallows Eve, right? So that's where we get the word Halloween. So then we settle America in the 1600s. Firm lines were drawn in those northern territories. The Protestants had very firm beliefs, did not allow this to be practiced where they were. But in the 1800s, the mid-1800s, something happened that caused what people to come over that really popularized this Samhain celebration. Irish immigrants. Remember the potato famine brought them over? Reform in the late 1800s tried to move away from the wicked practices, but it was another form of what? Compromise, right? Because they said, let's get away from the wicked practices and let's make it a neighborhood and community thing. And then what three things allowed Halloween to really gain fame? TV was one. Magazine publications, but probably. And then movies. So that's our brief account of how we ended up with Halloween here in the United States. If you guys will turn to Ecclesiastes 1:9. What has been is what will be, and what has been done is what will be done, and there is nothing new under the sun. I'm also going to read 10. Is there a thing of which it is said, see, this is new, it has been already in the age before us? This practice of Samhain and the practice of Halloween is not new. There is nothing new that's been going on. The occult, it's been happening since the age of Moses and prior. The occult, again, remember, means secret. Halloween is a high day of worship for Satanists, and these practices have been going on forever, and Satan is a false god. So go to Ecclesiastes 12, 13 through 14. And Violet, I'm going to have you read on the microphone.
Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of men. For God shall bring every work into judgment with every secret thing, whether it be good or whether it may be evil.
Great. Okay, so if the occult means secret, what's God going to do to the secret thing? He's going to reveal it, right? So we don't have to worry about it not being revealed. It's going to be revealed. But what is the sum of man? What is our job in Ecclesiastes? What does it say? We just read it. Fear God and keep his commandments, right? So that's what we're supposed to do. So let's turn to Exodus 20. 1 through 6, we're going to read. And this is, Moses has gone up into the mountain, and the Lord is giving him the Ten Commandments. And God says, I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself a carved image or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. You shall not bow down to them or serve them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children to the third and fourth generation of those who hate me, but showing steadfast love to thousands of those who love me and keep my commandments. Okay, so if the sum of man is to fear God and to keep his commandments, in the Ten Commandments, we're focusing, remember, on what does God say about worshiping false gods. What does God command us concerning these false gods? He says, know God, what? Before. And what? Know what kind of image? They're both the same, right? Carved, graven, good. Okay, and nothing, we're not to worship anything that is, and there's three different places. Where are they? The water under the earth, right? So sea, earth, and then heaven. So that pretty much kind of covers everything that we have tangible in our lives, right? That we can see. We're not to worship anything, nothing, no likeness. Don't make anything that looks like these things. Don't what down? Don't bow down. And don't what? It's right after that. Serve. Good. Why does he tell them not to do this? What's he going to do if they do this? He's going to do what with iniquity? It's going to visit, be visited upon them, right? He's going to visit iniquity upon them. And that word visit, it means to deposit or bestow. And the word hate there, for those who hate me, that word means enemy. That means you've made God your what? Your enemy. Who wants God for their enemy? I sure don't, right? Exactly. I do not want God as my enemy. So if I participate in worshiping of false gods, I make God my enemy, and he bestows iniquity upon me. That's not something I want in my life, right? Let's look at Exodus 34, 10 through 17. Moses has gotten these Ten Commandments, and he comes back down the mountain, and what's happened? The golden calf has been made. And the Lord was like, I just told you to tell these people not to make these images out of things that are in the earth. And what do? They make a golden calf. So now he's back up on the mountain after he's destroyed the calf and those who decided to not be with God. So he's kind of having a restart now, and the Lord is reminding him of these things. So we're starting in 10. And he said, behold, I am making a covenant before all your people. I will do marvels such as have not been created in all the earth and in any nation, and all the people among whom you are shall see the work of the Lord, for it is an awesome thing that I will do with you. Observe what I command you this day. Behold, I will drive out before you the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites. Take care lest you make a covenant with the inhabitants of the land to which you go, lest it become a snare in your midst. You shall tear down their altars and break their pillars and cut down their asherim. For you shall worship no other god. For the Lord, whose name is Jealous, is a jealous God. Lest you make a covenant with the inhabitants of the land, and when they whore after other gods and sacrifice to their gods, and you are invited, you eat of his sacrifice, and you take of their daughters for your sons, and their daughters whore after their gods, and make your sons whore after their gods. You shall not make for yourself any gods of cast metal. Okay, the word whore here means to commit idolatry. So we understand the meaning of that. And then also the word jealous, it means jealous. And if you look up in Webster's what jealous means, jealous equals exacting, exclusive devotion, intolerant of rivalry. The word worship in the Hebrew here, it says bow down, crouch, fall down, humbly beseech, make obeisance. And that word obeisance means to have profound respect and esteem mingled with fear and affection. Do reverence or to worship. So I looked up what worship meant in the Webster's, and one of the definitions was to perform religious exercises in honor of. Okay, we get that. But listen to this one. To honor with extravagant love and extreme submission. Well, that's really like my heart, to worship God. And I believe that's his heart for us to worship him too. But when we look at this definition, and there's a lot of different things it could mean, when God says not to worship other gods, what do you think he means here? Let's underline the ones that he's talking about. Do you think he means bow down? Yeah, okay, so we'll underline that one. How about crouch? You think that would apply in this context? You think it could? Okay. How about fall down? Okay. How about humbly beseech? Okay. How about make obeisance, which is that profound respect mingled with fear and affection? Right, okay. And to do reverence, all right. And to worship, if we're talking about even to perform religious exercises in honor of, does he want us doing that? Okay, no. So, and he does not definitely want us to honor with extravagant love and extreme submission. So let's move on. Now we're going to look at two examples of kings who dealt with false gods in their kingdom and what their choices, what outcome came from the choices they made. Okay, so let's go to 1 Kings 8, 52. Okay, so Solomon has built this beautiful temple for the Lord. It was on his heart to do so. His father David wasn't allowed to do so because he had too much blood on his hands from fighting and wars. But Solomon is called to build this temple for God. And so he has built it and he's put a lot of effort and it's beautiful. And he's dedicating it to the Lord in such a way that it's very public. And he's asking the Lord to please turn your eyes upon this temple. And when the people pray towards this temple, please honor their prayer and just be with us, God, is basically what he's saying. So these verses 52 and 53 sum up his prayer. He says, let your eyes, speaking to God, let your eyes be open to the plea of your servant and to the plea of your people Israel, giving ear to them whenever they call you. For you separated them from among all the peoples of the earth to be your heritage, as you declared through Moses your servant when you brought our fathers out of Egypt, O Lord. Okay, so he's asking God, please, please be with us. And God responds. So we're going to go to 1 Kings 8, 57 through 61. This is still Solomon continuing on with his benediction, but it talks about the worship of false gods. So we're going to continue on with what he's speaking to the Israelites after he prays his prayer to the Lord. He says, the Lord our God be with us, as he was with our fathers. May he not leave us or forsake us, that he may incline our hearts to him, to walk in all his ways and to keep his commandments, his statutes, and his rules, which he commanded our fathers. Let these words of mine, which I have pleaded before the Lord, be near to the Lord our God day and night, and may he maintain the cause of his servant and the cause of his people Israel, as each day requires, that all the peoples of the earth may know that the Lord is God. There is no other. What is Solomon declaring here? He declares that the Lord is what? The Lord is God. And he says there is no other. So what is Solomon declaring here to all the people of Israel that he believes? There is one God. And it's the Lord, and that's it. There's no other. He's making this public declaration of this. Let your heart, therefore, be wholly true to the Lord our God, walking in his statutes and keeping his commandments as at this day. Okay, now God responds. Go to 1 Kings 9, 1 through 9. So God had shown himself to Solomon one time prior, and he appears to him again the second time. It says, as soon as Solomon had finished building the house of the Lord and the king's house and all that Solomon desired to build, the Lord appeared to Solomon a second time as he had appeared to him at Gibeon. And the Lord said to him, I have heard your prayer and your plea, which you have made before me. I have consecrated this house that you have built by putting my name there forever. My eyes and my heart will be there for all time. And as for you, if you will walk before me as David your father walked, with integrity of heart and uprightness, doing according to all that I have commanded you and keeping my statutes and my rules, then I will establish your royal throne over Israel forever, as I promised David your father, saying, you shall not lack a man on the throne of Israel. But if you turn aside from following me, you or your children, and do not keep my commandments and my statutes that I have set before you, but go and serve other gods and worship them. Okay, so what did he say? So if you go serve and worship other gods, these things are going to happen to you. He says, then I will cut off Israel from the land that I have given them and the house that I have consecrated for my name. I will cast them out of my sight, and Israel will become a proverb and a byword among all peoples. That's a warning, by the way. Like, remember the people Israel and what happened with them? It became a horrible warning. They would have become a horrible warning. And this house will become a heap of ruins. Everyone passing by it will be astonished and will hiss, and they will say, why has the Lord done this to the land and to this house? Then they will say, because they abandoned the Lord their God, who brought their fathers out of the land of Egypt and laid hold on other gods and worshiped them and served them. Therefore, the Lord has brought all this disaster upon them. So why did all these things happen to them? Because they abandoned God and worshiped other gods. Okay, so we have Solomon declaring the Lord is God, there is no other. We have God reminding him, yes, and do not serve or worship other gods. If you do, these things will happen. So let's find out what Solomon decides and later on in his life and what the outcome of his kingdom is. Let's go to 1 Kings 11. And by the way, Solomon was, you know, a really good king. I mean, he loved the Lord. He did wonderful things for the Lord. But later on in his life, he has a snag. All right, 1 Kings 11, 1 through 13. I'm going to kind of stop as we go a little bit. Now Solomon loved many foreign women. Who did Solomon love? Many, and they were foreign. Along with the daughter of Pharaoh, Moabite, Ammonite, Edomite, Sidonianite, and Hittite women, from the nations concerning which the Lord had said to the people of Israel, you shall not enter into marriage with them, neither shall they with you, for surely they will turn away your heart after their gods. He had 700 wives, princesses, and 300 concubines, and his wives turned away his heart. For when Solomon was old, his wives turned away his heart after other gods, and his heart was not wholly true to the Lord his God, as was the heart of David his father. Okay, so who did Solomon disobey here? He disobeyed God. Solomon's heart was turned away by the foreign women he married, which God told him not to do. And he told him why. He didn't just say, don't do it. He even gave him a reason, which he didn't have to do, but he did. Okay, so let's continue reading. We're at verse 5. For Solomon went after Ashtaroth, the goddess of the Sidonians, and after Milcom, the abomination of the Ammonites. So Solomon did what was evil in the sight of the Lord and did not wholly follow the Lord as David his father had done. Then Solomon built a high place for Shamash, the abomination of Moab, and Molech, the abomination of the Ammonites, and the mountain east of Jerusalem. And so he did for all his foreign wives who made offerings and sacrifice to their gods. And the Lord was angry with Solomon because his heart had turned away from the Lord, the God of Israel, who had appeared to him twice. If you continue, therefore the Lord said to Solomon, since this has been your practice and you have not kept my covenant and my statutes that I have commanded you, I will surely tear the kingdom from you and will give it to your servant. He continues to say, except for the sake of David, I will allow one tribe to continue on through your line. And he goes on. So what was Solomon's outcome here? What happens to his kingdom? Right? He tore the kingdom away. So Solomon was a good king. He built the temple of the Lord. He loved the Lord. But later on in his life, he got tripped up, made a bad choice, got distracted, and started worshiping false gods. And the outcome of his worship of false gods was that his kingdom was torn away. There wasn't peace in his kingdom. It was a big mess, right? So we have Solomon's outcome. So that's our one example. Now we're going to go look at a second example. So we are going to turn to 1 Kings 15, 9 through 15. So now we're going to talk about Asa. And Asa is of the line of Judah. Between Solomon and Asa were two kings, and they were both wicked. And Asa, he came out on the good end of the stick, and he wanted to do what was right in the sight of the Lord. So we're going to read about Asa. We're going to review the things that Asa did. So we're going to talk about Asa's reform. So the things that we're reading should be on this side. Okay. In the 20th year of Jeroboam, king of Israel, Asa began to reign over Judah, and he reigned for 41 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Maacah, the daughter of Abishalom. And Asa did what was right in the eyes of the Lord, as David his father had done. He put away the male cult prostitutes out of the land and removed all the idols that his fathers had made. He also removed his mother from being queen mother because she had made an abominable image of Asherah. And Asa cut down her image and burned it at the brook of Kidron. Now here 14 says, but the high places were not taken away. And when we read this next verse, you'll see that he took away the high places in Judah, but the high places in Israel, which is where the kingdom got split, and Asa ended up ruling Judah and Benjamin, and the 10 other tribes were being ruled by another line. Those high places did not come down, but the high places in Asa's kingdom he took down. Okay, let's skip over to 2 Chronicles 14, 1 through 6. Abijah slept with his fathers, and they buried him in the city of David. And Asa, his son, reigned in his place. In his days, the land had rest for 10 years, and Asa did what was good and right in the eyes of the Lord his God. He took away the foreign altars and the high places and broke down the pillars and cut down the Asherim and commanded Judah to seek the Lord, the God of their fathers, and to keep the law and the commandment. He also took out all of the cities of Judah, the high places and the incense altars, and the kingdom had rest under him. He built fortified cities in Judah, for the land had rest. He had no war in those years, for the Lord gave him peace. Okay, skip over to 15:1. We're going to read all of 15. The Spirit of God came upon Azariah, the son of Oded, and he went out to meet Asa and said to him, "Hear me, Asa, and all Judah and Benjamin. The Lord is with you while you are with him. If you seek him, he will be found by you. But if you forsake him, he will forsake you. For a long time, Israel was without the true God and without a teaching priest and without law. But when in their distress, they turned to the Lord, the God of Israel, and sought him, he was found by them. In those times, there was no peace to him who went out or to him who came in, for great disturbances afflicted all the inhabitants of the land. They were broken in pieces. Nation was crushed by nation and city by city, for God troubled them with every sort of distress. But you, take courage. Do not let your hands be weak, for your work shall be rewarded." As soon as Asa heard these words, the prophecy of Azariah, the son of Oded, he took courage and put away the detestable idols from the land of Judah and Benjamin and from the cities that he had taken in the hill country of Ephraim. And he repaired the altar of the Lord that was in front of the vestibule of the house of the Lord. And he gathered all Judah and Benjamin and those from Ephraim, Manasseh and Simeon, who were residing with them, for great numbers had deserted to him from Israel when they saw that the Lord his God was with him. They were gathered at Jerusalem in the third month of the 15th year of the reign of Asa. They sacrificed to the Lord on that day from the spoil that they had brought 700 oxen and 7,000 sheep, and they entered into a covenant to seek the Lord, the God of their fathers, with all their heart and with all their soul. But that whoever would not seek the Lord, the God of Israel, should be put to death, whether young or old, man or woman. They swore an oath to the Lord with a loud voice and with shouting and with trumpets and with horns. And all Judah rejoiced over the oath, for they had sworn with all their heart and had sought him with their whole desire. And he was found by them, and the Lord gave them rest all around. Even Maacah, his mother, King Asa removed from being queen because she had made a detestable image of Asherah. Asa cut down her image, crushed it, and burned it at the brook of Kidron. But the high places were not taken out of Israel. Nevertheless, the heart of Asa was wholly true all his days, and he brought into the house of God the sacred gifts of his father and his own sacred gifts, silver and gold and vessels. And there was no more war until the 35th year of the reign of Asa. Okay, so we have Asa doing what? He puts away the prostitutes. He removes idols. He takes away foreign altars and high places. He broke down the pillars. He cut down the Asherim. He removed his mother, who was queen at the time because of her false god, and destroyed that false god. And what do we see that happened in his kingdom because of his hard lines he was drawing? They have what? They have peace and rest. right? We have Solomon, whose kingdom was tore away from him. It is in complete unrest at that time because he chose to worship false gods. You have Asa coming against the worship of false gods, and God gives him rest. And not only, I think, which is interesting, is the hard lines he was drawing in his kingdom. He said, not only are we going to tear down all these things, but if you don't worship God, you're done, right? I mean, he was taking it to that extent, and the Lord honored him for it. So we have Solomon. What did he do? What does the word say? Does anybody remember that word? Or you can just look up here that he did to the women or to the thing that caught him up, his love for foreign women. He did what to them? He clave to them. The word clave, it means to adhere to. So Solomon chose to adhere to the thing that was tripping him up. He chose to stick to it, to the thing that the Lord said, don't do. And he knew was going to be a hard thing for him, instead of doing what Asa did, which was to take courage. That means to conquer, right? God told him, take courage. And at the moment that the prophet was done speaking, Asa took courage, and he went and conquered these things that were in his kingdom, where Solomon, he clave to them. So in our lives, when we have to draw hard lines, like we're talking about drawing a hard line with Halloween, which is basically a day to worship Satan. Satan is a false god, so that is a day that people worship a false god, and we do not want to be participants in that. So we have to draw a hard line. We have a choice. We can either adhere to it, like Solomon does. He claves to it, and we can practice, and we can experience our kingdom in disarray. Or we can take courage and conquer it and experience peace and rest in our kingdom. Because the Lord clearly said that the sum of all man is to fear God and to keep his commandments. And he clearly commands that we shall not have any other God before him. Correct? You guys agree? In agreement? So we are going to get into this week, be thinking about the thing that may be coming against you if you're having a hard time giving up practicing Halloween. If you're having a hard time, be thinking about what is that thing that's coming in the way. Ask the Lord to identify it for you. Bring it up in your heart and your mind so that you can look at it. Because next week we're going to talk about how to conquer those things and not adhere to them. Okay? Okay, let's pray. Father, thank you so much, God, that you are the only God, that you are the one true God, Father. I pray that you would just place upon each one of our hearts, God, a knowing that you are that one true God, and that we would desire only, God, to worship you. And those things that come against that truth, we command to go in the name of Jesus. And we ask you, Lord, to show us how to overcome those things, Father, that are coming against you and coming against your commandments, Father, to worship you and only you. I thank you for your son, Jesus. Be with us tonight as we worship. Help us to just focus on you, God. It's in your son's name we pray. Amen.